Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 221 of The Psych Files. And my name is Michael Britt, psychology teacher and host of the show. And in this episode, we're going to talk about that Facebook study that everyone is talking about. Got a little bit of a roundup for you, and I think I can give you some perspective, or at least my perspective, on what it all means or doesn't mean. Because it's been a huge thing that the study was done, and all the sharing that is going on the various social media sources. I think it's really one of the reasons, a couple of reasons why it's being shared so much is that this is something, the Facebook, that we all have some experience with. So while there are more important things going on in the world and more interesting research going on, especially when you look at the results of this one, which are not terribly impressive, but getting ahead of myself, this is really not the most interesting thing going on, but it is something that we all kind of connect with. Most of us are Facebook users. Now, most of us either love or hate it. I think actually most of us distrust it. I don't know about you, but when I have an option to log in with either Twitter, Google, or Facebook, I typically choose Twitter because I just don't, or Google. I don't know. I have some reason, right? We all just don't trust Facebook that much, and I think that's another reason why it's being shared. All right, so they did a study, and for a number of reasons, it's interesting. Although it's been really blown out of proportion. So what I've done is I've put together a concept map, as is something I often do because I love them so much. And I don't know, concept maps are just the way I think. You know, they have all the little nodes and they go off in different directions. And I think it's a great way to organize ideas. So on my site, www.thepsychfiles.com, you'll see a link to the map. I'll probably embed the map, but there's a link to it as well. And so I break down the study into its essential components and then provide some links to articles that talk about it, and some of which I think are just totally blow the situation out of proportion, such as this one here. Facebook ran a huge psychological experiment on users and manipulated the emotions of more than 600,000 people. Not true, but there's an example. Here's another one. Facebook made users depressed in a secret research. Here's another one. Facebook reveals newsfeed experiment to control emotions. And finally, Facebook reveals secret experiment to control your emotions. Oh, boy. That, I guess, is what do they call that? Those titles, you know, that I talked about them before, you know, titles that that hook us because they sound like, because it's got Facebook, which we all know, and it sounds like something conspiracy is going on and something dangerous is happening. But let's just hold on there before we get out of control. All right, so some of the basics in case you haven't heard about this. So they actually did do a study. It occurred during a one-week period of time, January 11th to the 18th of 2012. And yes, there were 689,003 of Facebook users that were involved in some capacity. So that alone, so first of all, Facebook, the fact that they did it is unique and interesting. The fact that there were nearly 700,000 subjects is it's pretty interesting, too. You don't see that all the time, right? Most studies have very few subjects, less than 100 maybe, or less than 300. So 689,000. It's pretty interesting. Here's the focus, quote, from the published research. Quote, whether exposure to emotional content led people to post content that was consistent with the exposure, thereby testing whether exposure to verbal affective expressions leads to similar verbal expressions, a form of emotional contagion. Now, this actually is somewhat interesting, the idea that they're playing with here, and you may have wondered about this yourself as you play around with Facebook. Now, I was recently on vacation, and so I took a little video of my son. He was using something, a board, I forget what he called it, a skim board or something like that. Anyway, he's skimming across the water, And so, whatever, I took the video, posted it on Facebook. But I did think afterwards, oh, what does this say, and what will people think? Oh, lucky him. I mean, will they say, hey, that's great, you go for it, have fun? Or will people say, oh, you know, yeah, lucky that guy, off on vacation and everything, hanging out by the ocean? So have you wondered, I assume you must have wondered, that when you post something to Facebook, do people just join in with you with the emotion of what you're posting? They go, hooray for you, you go. Or do they, is there a sort of a negative thing there? Do people say, well, do they have just the opposite reaction? So, and you could see that too. So I think the question of how does the content of your news feed affect you, in other words, other people's postings, how do they affect you emotionally? Okay, so it's a perfectly good question. So what they did, of course, there was really four groups, but there's only two of interest, and that is they either reduced the negativity. So what they did was they analyzed the content of these texts in your posts, and interestingly enough, they used a tool called the Linguistic Inquiry and Word Count Software. The LIWC. Now, that was developed by James Pennebaker, who was interviewed on this podcast for episode 166. He had written a very interesting book called The Secret Life of Pronouns. So, James Pennebaker, psychologist, and he digs into language and breaks it down in order to discover what's underlying it. What are we really saying, and what might we be revealing? So he's into, his software was used here to analyze posts. And this is also, you may have seen if you use Twitter a lot, that sentiment analysis is used as well. Similar kind of thing. We're to find out what kind of state people are in. What do the emotions, really what we're saying is, what does the content of people's tweets potentially reveal about their emotions? And lots of people are interested in this, because what if we find that, and I think this was a TED Talk, I'll have to dig this up, what if we discover that in a certain sections of the world, because just about everyone tweets, I mean, okay, there are definitely some biases in terms of the sample here, but let's just say, put those aside for a second. What if we discover that in certain areas of the world, the tweets coming out of them are filled with extremely negative or angry tweets? And can we predict that something's going to happen there? Right? Might we be able to predict outbreaks of violence before they occur? So that's an interesting thing to want to research. Okay, so Facebook posts are analyzed using this software, and that for some people, the negative posts, the ones denoting a negative emotion, were removed so that you saw more positive posts from your friends, family, and whoever. In others, the positively oriented posts were reduced. Not removed, but reduced, so that you saw more negative stuff. So you either saw more positive posts or more negative ones. And they did have control conditions, and they did choose people at randomly. So it had many of the elements one would want in an experiment. So it's important to know they make this point that, although no one's really buying this, that all of your posts, the posts that you see in Facebook, are manipulated, if you will, anyway. So you don't see everything that your friends and family post. Facebook sifts through them automatically and presents you with the ones that you have, and then there's all kinds of algorithms for this, probably ones that you have from people that you have liked in the past. You know, they take data from your previous behavior and use that to predict, to give you posts that you'll most likely have you know, some interest in. And because, of course, the overall goal there is to, they might say, you know, make your Facebook experience more positive. Others might say, really, it is, perhaps it's that, but it's also to keep you on the Facebook site. Because the longer you stay on the site, the more likely you are to click on one of the ads, which you probably have noticed are tailored to things that you've done on other websites. So they're probably things that you're interested in. So this is quite a managed experience, right? I mean, it's a business, right? It's a company, and then they're in business to make profit. Now, by the way, if you hear a fan in the background, it's because it's extremely hot today, and I just have to have fans on, or I'm gonna sweat here to death. Okay, so that's the manipulation. Some people saw positive, some people saw negative. They say, well, look, if you wanted to see anyone's any particular person's posts, all of them, you could always go to that person's site. You know, yes, but most of us don't. We hang out in the timeline for a little while, view a few, like a few, make a few posts, and then get the heck out of there. That's my guess. All right, so what are we looking at? We are going to, what are we going to measure here? Well, quote, emotional expression was, I'll say, measured on a per-person basis as the percentage of words produced by that person during the experimental period. That would be the period after, I believe it's a week after, you were exposed to these overly positive or overly negative posts, right? So the percentage of words produced by that person during the experimental period that were either positive or negative. So again, we used this LIWC, Linguistic Inquiry and Word Count software, to analyze the content of your posts. All right, to see if, and again, it conceivably could go either way. So if you see lots of positive posts, does that make you go, well, yeah, those people are having fun, you know? Yeah, well, you know, does it make you negative or does it make you positive? And their prediction is along the lines of this idea of emotional contagion, which you no doubt have experienced if you ever go to a basketball game, a soccer game, a baseball, any sports game. Even if you don't care really who wins or loses, you get caught up in the emotions that are going on around you. Somewhat related to research by Schachter and Singer many years ago, a little bit, that, you know, we get caught up, right? So do we get caught up in the positivity and post more positive things? Well, they would call that, it would be called emotional contagion, all right? So, hypothesis, quote, people in the positivity... People, they go the opposite here. People in the positivity reduced condition, okay, in other words, they saw more negative stuff, should express increased negativity. And people in the negativity reduced, in other words, I saw positive stuff, should express increased positivity, right? So that emotional contagion should occur. Okay. Another quote that I think is good. Again, another example of how this is a pretty good, pretty well-run experiment. Nobody's arguing that the experiment itself isn't somewhat, you know, well set up. Quote, our experimental groups did not differ in emotional expression during the week before the experiment. So you randomly assigned people, but you just they checked beforehand because someone could say, well, how do you know that if you had a lot of negative posts the week of the study, that you didn't also have negative posts the week before the study, right? How maybe the groups differed to begin with. And they checked that and found out that it not significantly, right? So the groups could be said to be, you know, equal in their emotional, in the content of their emotional, the emotional content of their posts prior to the study. Now, remember, we are inferring your emotions based upon the words you use. No one You're not in a lab. Now, in a laboratory, you might actually, there might be other measures of your emotional expression. There might be a galvanic skin response. There might be more open-ended questionnaires, let's say 5 or 10 questions about your current emotional state. There might be an open-ended, how do you feel right now? What are some of the feelings that you have? All those can be done in the laboratory, but here we're inferring emotions from the words you use in your posts, which itself is a bit of a jump. For example, you might use the word crap or crappy, right? In your post, you could say your car is a piece of crap, although someone might argue, yeah, but that's a little bit it's negative, and it would probably be flagged for negative. How strongly do you feel negatively? So it's a question you have to ask yourself, and one of the critiques one might make here, which is people do post positive and negative stuff, but how strongly do they really feel it? That's a good question, I think. I mean, the other thing is, of course, and this just adds to the noise, but you could say, oh, great. Oh, that's just great, you know. Well, you use the word great, and this software would pick that up as a positive, post. When obviously it could be meant, it depends upon the emoji next to it, perhaps, and doesn't sound like they looked at that. So this is I'll get to some of my reaction in a minute. I mean, I guess this is one of them, which is, you know, this is really, there's a number of jumps being made here and a lot of room for error. But you could say, okay, but that's why you have a lot of subjects, so that, you can, there's error, there's always error. But what's the overall result? Okay, so their overall results are that they did find something significant, okay, that there were significantly more positive posts from people who saw positive posts and negative ones from negative posts. So, quote, these results suggest that the emotions expressed by friends via online social networks influence our own moods, constituting, to our knowledge, the first experimental evidence for massive-scale emotional contagion via social networks. That's pretty powerful language. Especially when you consider the other thing that statistics or statisticians look at, in addition to a significant result, in other words, it's unusual, it's unexpected, it's not impossible, but we look at the effect size. In other words, it's unusually different, but given that, how strong is the effect? And it is exceedingly small. Okay, the D, which is how we calculate this, was 0.001. All right, so out of the almost 700,000 people in this study, if some were affected, it was an exceedingly small number. Okay? So we'll go into more of those ifs in just a second, but this really does not... does not merit things such as, you know, that thousands of people's emotions were manipulated and controlled, or Facebook users were made depressed. That's what the popular press does, right? You try to get clicks. And hey, look, I'm covering this study, so you can ask yourself that question too. Who's this guy Britt, and what's he trying to do here? Although I hope not to. I usually create the title of my episodes after I'm done, you know, so I will try not to make anything too exclamatory in the title of my posts. Other reactions that I think are more realistic. Facebook research dances around informed consent. So we'll talk about that in just a second. All right. So there you have it. So you now know about the study and its findings, and that really we're making huge leaps to suggest that these these posts had strong emotional content, that there's a relationship between the words you use and the emotions that you have. I mean, I don't know. Okay, yeah, I would say probably some people were affected. And we'll talk about whether it's important or not that some people were affected. But first, the informed consent issue. Now, they claim in this study that, quote, the study was consistent with Facebook's data use policy, to which all users agree prior to creating an account on Facebook, which constitutes informed consent for this research. Now, that did not fly, and that is where most of the criticism is rightly placed. Now, if you in my concept map on the website, you will find a link to the this data use, but the paragraph that really addresses this is, let's see. Here it is. There's a bullet list of things that, for example, in addition to helping people see and find things that you do and share, we may use the information we receive about you, bullet, 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 and here's the one of interest, to measure or understand the effectiveness of ads you and others see, including to deliver relevant ads to you. Okay, sorry, that's not the one I was looking for. I wanted, okay, for internal operations, including troubleshooting, data analysis, testing, research and service improvement. So that's where the data analysis is. Now, of course, we all know that almost nobody reads this stuff. And that is, and to essentially bury your informed consent in a page that almost nobody reads, but even if they did, it would be all the way down here. This is bullet number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and two words saying data analysis. That's where the uproar is, I think, rightfully placed here, because really informed consent is more than just something that we try to kind of, well, you said yes or you didn't say no, right? I mean, you created your account, and in creating your account, you sort of tacitly approved these things or agreed to them. Well, that's not what true researchers would call informed consent. If you do an experiment, let's say most experiments are done in colleges. If you're in college and you serve as the subject in an experiment, you're given a form, and that form gives you enough information about the specific study you're taking right now to allow you to make a decision, right? That's where the informed, okay? An informed decision about whether or not you want to be a part of the study. So, you know, if you were taking medications, you would be told that the study was about taking medications, that these are the possible side effects, you may have these, you know, emotional reactions. If you have a history of this type, then maybe, you know, you might want to, there are some dangers involved, right? This is a, you know, it's a lengthy, or can be lengthy, depending upon the complexity of the study. But these informed consent forms are created on the basis of feedback from an internal review board from people who are not your researchers themselves, but people who look at this and say, all right, are there any potential risks? And what should people know before they participate? So really probably the best way, and this is really a challenge, suppose you think that this information is worth having, it's worth knowing. What is the effect of positive and negatively worded posts? Does it make people more positive, more negative? You know, we could argue about the value of knowing that, but suppose you said, all right, it is worth knowing. Okay, so then what should Facebook users be told? In addition to, well, you know, aside from this thing they may have agreed upon years ago, which is another problem, what should you know? And probably what should have happened on January 11th of 2012 is something should have popped up on your Facebook page saying that, asking you if you'd like to participate. We're doing a study. Now, there's tricky wording here because, of course, you don't tell people exactly what you're going to do and what you're looking for, because then that kind of ruins everything. People will be on the lookout. But in this case, so this is the challenge. How do you, proactively pop something up in front of people and say, look, would you like to participate? Now, of course, many people won't, but, some people will, and you want to make sure that they know. For example, you should know that what? How would you word this? And I think this is actually a good kind of a project for psychology students. What would you say? I don't know. What would I say? Would you like to participate in a study? Facebook will be not. I wouldn't use the word manipulating, although, you know, because if you use that word, people won't participate. But Facebook will be adjusting. If you agree to participate, we will be adjusting the content of your news feed. We are looking to see how the adjustments in this content might affect people's emotions. That would be, I think, fair without telling you exactly what's going on. That's a little bit vague there, but your emotions might make people feel perhaps. Let's see, that's a tough one. The wording here is tricky. But the thing is, what you're trying to catch is this. You might say, look, this is too much ado about nothing. Well, okay, maybe, but, you know, some people, let's say you're having a really difficult time right now in your life, right? Some people are going through difficult periods. Maybe they're depressed. Maybe people have a psychological disorder, right? This is our role as psychologists and as researchers in the field of psychology. Are there people who might be affected by this? Well, you know, either way you go, there are people, yes, who are going through difficult times, people who are feeling, you know, depressed. There are also people who have emotional roller coasters going on, so they can be sort of bipolar. They can have strong emotional reactions. So if you know that, you should know that before you click yes, you might want to say, well, you know what, this isn't, I don't want to participate. You know, I mean, I think I did at first, but you say this to yourself inside your head. This is too difficult a time for me, or I'm vulnerable to manipulate, you know, emotional ups and downs, and this isn't for me, right? And that's what a much better informed consent would have looked like, in my opinion. Now, Facebook did respond to the criticisms. In particular, one of the key researchers, Adam Kramer. And here's a quote from his response. Again, linked to from my website, and also in the concept map. Quote, having written and designed this experiment myself, I can tell you that our goal was never to upset anyone. I can understand why some people have concerns about it, and my co-authors and I are very sorry for the way the paper described the research and any anxiety it caused. In hindsight, the research benefits of the paper may not have justified all of this anxiety, and that's the ethical dilemma, right? The benefits over the risks. While we've always considered what research we do very carefully, we, parentheses, not just me, several other researchers at Facebook, have been working on improving our internal review practices. The experiment in question was run in early 2012, and we have come a long way since then. Those review practices will also incorporate what we've learned from the reaction to this paper. Okay. That's an interesting response. Whether you go by that, I guess, is the thing. And that's the thing. A lot of people, and the other reason, as I mentioned, this thing is being shared so much is because people don't trust Facebook because it's done so much in the past, and it shares things, and it's that we didn't necessarily thought we had agreed to, and it's creepy the way the advertisements pop up just seconds after you looked at something on another site. You know, that's just, you know, that's part of the problem here. A couple of reactions. One of the things I like to do whenever I read something on the web, I like to get as far as I can in the comments, although there was one of the articles that I linked to here that had 536 comments, and I was like, well, you know, forget it. I'm not going to go through all of those, of course. But here's an interesting comment. Emotional manipulation is still emotional manipulation, no matter how small of a sample it affected. Now, and this was by Kate LeFranc. And the point is a very good one, because you might say, hey, look, you know, this only affected a, you just said it affected very few people. And she backs up my point here, which is, hey, look, it's still emotional manipulation. It doesn't matter how small the sample is. It's sort of like saying, well, a few people were killed, but not that many. Well, anyone who suffered unnecessarily, that's not a good thing. And if it could have been done in a better way, then it should have been done in a better way. Another quote. By the way, these quotes are from this very same page that the Facebook reacts to reacts to the reaction. Quote: This was an affective intervention, right? The emotional intervention. It should have required informed consent. The user's agreement does not qualify as informed consent in any way. It may provide legal cover for Facebook, but it is not informed consent. Another comment, Sean Tucker: you'll never know what impact this actually had on depressed people. You can only measure what they posted to Facebook, which isn't a particularly meaningful or realistic indicator of their emotional state. I trust you're a reasonable person who doesn't set out to cross ethical boundaries, but on this one, I think Facebook needs to admit it did so, and it will make some changes. This study was unethical by any reasonable standard. There's nothing wrong with admitting that and figuring out a way to do it better. There's a lot wrong with going ahead with anything like this ever again. So that's my summary. One final comment would be, again, should we really care about all this? And you could say no, because of it's a very small effect, and it probably affect very few people. And by the way, and I've already addressed that one, you know, about how it affects only a few people. But some people are saying, look, worry about it. Facebook manipulates your news feed all the time anyway. Right? So this is not new. But again, so in other words, because we've done something we shouldn't have done before, we can continue doing it. And there's got to be a difference between if you like a product, we show you an ad for the product, and we're intentionally trying to manipulate your emotions. So it's definitely, if nothing else, it's definitely not the way psychologists do research and does not constitute informed consent. All right, that's my take. Feel free to come to the website and give me your feedback on this, www.thepsychfiles.com. And by the way, this research on the reactions to it are all available from the Psych Explorer app. It's a psychology news app that I create and maintain. So if you come to the website, you'll see links to it along to other apps that I create as part of the Psych Files. So if you've got a smartphone and want some smart apps, then come to the site and you'll find them. Okay, thanks a lot. Hope you enjoyed this, and I'll see you next time in the Psych Files. Take care.